I'd like to bring in now my my friend and the author of We Kill Because We Can, great book coming out in paper book this September. We had her on two Fridays ago, back for another Free Phone Friday. Lori Calhoun, who just happens to be in the UK and bore witness to all this mania yesterday. Lori, how are you?
Very well, thanks, Mike.
Now, I assume that because you are just kind of squatting there in the UK, that they didn't let you vote yesterday.
That's correct. I did not vote, but I did sneak around the polls and do my own informal exit polling. Since they weren't doing exit polling, I decided to go talk to people, and it was a lot of fun.
So what did you discover via your own informal? And I'll go ahead and say that your exit polling is probably as accurate as YouGov.
That's right. Well, what happened is they decided that they were going to have no exit polling. So when I heard that, I immediately thought, oh, great. So the government's going to win. They're going to stay in. I mean, I just figured it was going to be fixed, because why would you not have exit polling? And so I just decided, well, I'm going to go out and talk to some people. So I talked to some people the day before the referendum, and I also talked to people on the day of the referendum as they exited the polls. And I found a remarkable result, which was that the people were overwhelmingly in favor of exiting the European Union, despite the fact that everyone, as you said, all the experts were saying, you can't do this, the sky will fall, we will have World War III, it went on and on, the doom and gloom that would ensue. And nonetheless, these people expressed a lot of enthusiasm for getting out of the EU. One of the most fascinating things I noted was that when I first asked them, they weren't really forthcoming. It was almost as though they had been subjected to so much of this Remain shaming that they were afraid to say that they voted leave. But when they found out that I wasn't a Remain shamer, then they started gushing with all of their reasons for why the EU was horrible and that we had to get out of it and they had to, you know, take their country back. So it was a fantastic experience. I really enjoyed talking to the people of Britain yesterday and the day before.
Now, this is amazing. Now, you said, I hadn't heard this, Remain shaming.
Yes, it's very similar to what we have in the United States. I agree with what you were just saying about the parallels with the Trump campaign, because we have the same thing in the United States. You can't, in good company, in polite company, I should say, state that you're a Trump supporter. I'm not actually a Trump supporter. But let me say that if I were a Trump supporter, I wouldn't want to say this around anyone, because people just jump all over you. You know, because Trump is this madman and blah, 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 blah. The same thing has happened in Britain. If you want to get out of the EU, somehow you're crazy. You're like the madman who murdered MP Joe Cox a couple weeks ago. Okay, so that guy was in favor of Brexit. So suddenly they infer everyone who's in favor of Brexit must be a crazy murderer. So people, or they're a racist. That's the other
right, motive. Right, that's right.
If you favor Brexit, you're a racist. Now that one has really dumbfounded me forever, and this is why. First of all, if you're in favor of being in the EU, you're in favor of allowing free movement of unskilled Europeans through your country, throughout the entire European Union.
Yeah, right.
And the problem with that whole notion is that most Europeans are Caucasian. So I don't understand how being pro-EU makes you suddenly less racist than someone who wants to have, say, open borders for everyone. So if you're going to allow open borders, why don't you invite the Africans? Why don't you invite, you know, the Muslims? No, they take themselves as being, you know, very open and magnanimous. The mayor of London today sent out a tweet saying, Europeans, you're welcome in London. And my reaction is, well, so what? Aren't most Europeans Caucasian? How does that make you less of a racist than people who want to have some control over their borders? So those were the two things that people were really afraid of, I think. That they would just be considered like crazy bonkers, like the leader of the UKIP, United Kingdom Independence Party,
right.
Nigel Farage, has a lot of enemies. So people said, oh no, if I say that I'm in favor of Brexit, people will think that I like this guy, or and that I'm a racist, or that I'm like the crazy guy who murdered an MP, Joe Cox, who was a pro-Remain politician. So people were like afraid to express their actual preference. And I think this may have skewed the polling in the run-up to the referendum, which made it look like Remain was going to win. And in fact, the Brexiters won in the end.
It is. And it was. Now, in the I saw the map, the precinct map.
Yes.
And it's clear that there was it's clear that the English part of the UK, because you know you're separated into Northern Ireland, Scotland, then you have the English part and Wales and what have you here. It is clear that the eastern part, with the one exception, and that's London, that the eastern part and the hinterlands of the United Kingdom, where all those beautiful valleys and rolling hills and all those old castles are and what have you here, it's clear that they want it out. That rank and file English people are like, that's it. We've had it with this. That they want it out. What's also clear is that there most certainly is, and they have now identified themselves, there most certainly is an entitled class. You know, here in the United States, well, you know this, you're an American. We've had a war going on against welfare queens and welfare fraud and welfare cheaters and welfare this and teat sucklers or whatever you wish to call them since the early 1990s. And, you know, the knock has been, well, you know, these people are dependent. They're dependent on government. Let me tell you who's dependent on government. David Cameron. Labor Party is dependent, or Conservative Party is dependent upon government. In the United States, we have government workers that are dependent on government to the tune of a magnitude of 10 to 15 times more in direct cash payments than any, quote, welfare queen, close quote, ever will be. Now.
Oh, but Mike, the EU is so much worse. And this is why these people revolted. The EU is a meta-government. So not only do they have the UK government, you can say, you know, we have these politicians. And as you said, they're sponging off the taxpayers. But if you're a member of the EU, then there's also a meta-government. It's like this shadow government that governs over your government, and you have no access to them. So you watched the Brexit the movie.
Yes,
so you saw a little bit of that story.
No, I did watch Brexit the movie, and I had no idea. I thought I hated my government. I thought I hated my government, but now that I've seen Brexit the movie, I realize that the Europeans have it even worse than we do. I want to play a clip for you. You probably haven't heard this. This is on CNN late last night when the vote finally was called for leave. Christiane Amanpour sashayed down into the and was fraternized amongst the peasantry and held forth court, you see. With a spokesman for Nigel Farage. Laurie, you gotta hear this. You're gonna love this.
This is obviously a very divided day for Britain. You've seen it's practically 50-50, not quite, but it's practically 50-50. Nigel Farage, the head of your party, made a very boisterous victory speech saying that this is a victory for real people.
Yes.
For ordinary people.
Yes.
For decent people.
Yes.
What about the rest of the half of Britain who didn't vote? What about the, you know, foreigners?
Let me put this straight for you. The fact is that if this government and its allies hadn't put in so many scare, smear stories, saying the roof was going to fall in, everything would go wrong, would be cast adrift, there'd be wild cats running around the streets, then we would have won by a far bigger majority. The fact is, most people who voted Remain were scared Remainers.
Mm-hmm. You know, you say the government has you know, had scare tactics which gave you a less big victory than you thought you would have
had. They scared people.
Yeah. Now, some people find your party very, very scary because of the divisiveness, the xenophobia, the
there
sort of anti-immigration.
No, that is absolutely wrong, Christiane.
Well, let me see if you agree with this comment from the former chairman of the Conservative Party. This referendum campaign on the EU has delivered nasty divisiveness in industrial quantities, as always happens when nationalist sentiment is whipped up. The worst of the filth on immigration has been whipped up by Mr. Farage. How do you react to that? And particularly, obviously, with that horrible poster.
That is a party political statement. That is a party political statement.
Did you approve of the poster?
That poster came from a picture in The Guardian. Is the Guardian being excoriated for showing it?
No. The poster was a news poster of legitimate Syrian refugees coming to Slovenia.
Are we talking about legitimate Syrian refugees?
European refugees coming to Britain.
The head of the EU's agency.
Are you defending that poster?
The head of the EU's agency.
All right, so change this. So, Laurie, change the subject. Let's talk about xenophobia. And apparently Christiane Amanpour, not very well educated because she doesn't even know how to use xenophobia correctly in a sentence. Xenophobia, if that guy was actually a xenophobe and if he was out there in public, he would have to have been inside some sort of a plastic bubble because xenophobia is a fear of people that don't look like you. So what's going on here? Is he correct or is she correct?
Well, I think that there's a big confusion, and I wrote about this yesterday, specifically citing that poster. There's a big poster. It shows an outflux of Syrian refugees into Europe. And the poster says breaking point, and Nigel Farage is standing in front of it. And the point is, he's saying we can't keep taking hundreds of thousands of more immigrants. Okay, so people reacted very adversely to this poster. And I want to say that what's being missed in this entire debate is the source of those refugees. Those refugees have nothing intrinsically to do with Europe at all. Those refugees emerged because of military intervention, nonstop military intervention in the Middle East, and no one talks about that. Everyone just assumes, oh, the war stuff, that's just perfectly fine, and look, one of the consequences is hundreds of thousands of refugees.
That's right.
The whole reason why there came to be an EU crisis was because of this outpouring of refugees from the Middle East into Europe, of people who were just trying to escape the bombing. So it's really funny because the everything is getting mixed up. People are saying, oh, because you don't want all of these refugees from the Middle East to come into Europe, suddenly, you know, you're a racist. And Nigel Farage and his group are, I think, legitimately concerned. I can't say I'm a fan of his, but they're legitimately concerned about the fact that when new member states join the EU, it's always more likely that the new member citizens are going to want to come to Britain than vice versa. So as an example, Albania and Croatia are about to join.
Okay.
How many Brits want to go live in Albania?
None.
I'm guessing the number is probably like single digit. You know, it's very small, whatever it is. And so, of course, everyone conducts themselves, you know, according to what they perceive to be their self-interest. So an Albanian who suddenly is granted access to the European community is going to make a beeline for Britain. Why not, right? You're going to try to do the best that you can for your family, and that makes perfect sense. So what they're saying is, you know, basically, what the British people said yesterday in the vote is that enough is enough. You know, we've gone above and beyond, and we can't continue to do this. And that's what the poster says in a way, but it's a little bit strange because it's connecting an influx of Syrian refugees to the whole EU question. Now, the reason why it became problematic is because the Eurocrats decided to allow these refugees to come in. I believe Merkel was the one who led the charge on that before recanting later on when they realized it was overwhelming and they couldn't deal with it. But the problem is that these refugees are coming into the eastern part of Europe. They're just like crushing these poor nations, like poor Greece. You know, they're like the gateway of all refugees. And the point of the article I wrote yesterday is that maybe what we should really do is stop bombing these people so that they'll be happy and able to live in their own homelands.
What a novel idea, by the way.
Can you believe it? I know.
Laurie Calhoun, author of We Kill Because We Can, is on the Skype Maker hotline. Now, what is the quaint little hamlet that you're in the UK?
Well, I've moved on since we last spoke. I am now in the eastern coast of England. I'm in a place called Cramlington, which is north of Newcastle, and it's in a region called Northumberland. But what's interesting is I'm finding the same sort of sentiments wherever I go. I'm sort of, this is my big UK experience. I'm dipping into all sorts of villages. And I'm finding the same reactions from people on the ground, you might say. The peasants, as you said. These people have legitimate concerns about where the EU has overreached and affected their personal lives. by their rules and regulations and extracting funds from them, mm-hmm. and basically redistributing the wealth of the British people around the EU. I mean, the British economy is very strong, a little bit less strong today after the earth-shattering vote, but much stronger than most of the other members of the EU. So when you redistribute, of course, the wealthy give to the less wealthy. So that's what's been happening.
I wonder.
These people are feeling it. The fishing industry was completely
decimated.
By the EU. So basically, imagine this: you're a fisherman, and suddenly the EU has decided that your waters can be fished by anyone else in the EU. So you have to like share all of the water and the fish, and you have quotas. You can no longer shoot for the sky. You can only catch so many fish in British waters. So this has really affected workers in a very negative way, and fishermen are just one example. And that's why they revolted yesterday. They just said, no, we don't think that what you think is good for Britain is good for us. And I think it's perfectly legitimate for these people to vote out of self-interest. I mean, that's exactly what the Eurocrats do, right?
That's exactly right. Well, you know, the irony of that is that, you know, and you just nailed it, Laurie. You said, you know, these people are voting, we don't think that what you think is good for Great Britain is good for us. Well, there's a confusion amongst most people today because they don't really understand, and no one explores this question of what a state is. When I say state, I don't mean you're from New Jersey. I don't mean New Jersey state, but I do mean New Jersey state. I mean state as in when Mrs. Clinton was Secretary of State, she would visit France or Spain or whatever the case may be. We regard the term state today in a manner in which we would use the word country, because the two are synonymous. And I've done this exercise here on this show many times. And I did, okay, what is a state? Well, if you leave aside the geographical boundaries of rivers or whatever divides one state from another, a state is the people make up a state. The Albanian, you mentioned the Albanians. Well, the Albanian people are, that is the state. They can, and if they govern them themselves, they can choose to have a monarchy. They could choose to have a democracy. They can choose to have a canton republic like the Swiss have. And that's just an expression of how they're governing themselves, but the people are the state. So what I just heard you say, and what I saw in the movie Brexit, those fishermen, they are the state, and they certainly know what's best for them, and they would certainly know more about what's best for them than anyone that was an MP in Parliament or anyone that was certainly that was a Eurocrat going to the EU meetings in Brussels. So what really happened then yesterday was basically just rolling the clock back. This was understood for over a millennia. This was understood in all the countries of Europe. And it seems to me that's really what is – that's what's happening here. I'll tell you one more thing about the immigration problem in the U.K. The United Kingdom, as you well know, at one time was a Catholic country, and then Henry VIII comes along, you have the Protestant Revolt, and then it's a Protestant country, and then there's the Church of England, the Anglican Church. The religious content of the UK has been on the decline for quite some time, but it is a part of history, factual history, that the Anglo-Saxon people of that island had to, for over 1,000 years, deal with Mohammedan pirates and deal with attempts by Syrians or Libyans or Albanians, for that matter, that may have been forced into becoming Muslims. They had to deal with them, and they had war. They were always trying to keep them out. The Spanish fought an 813-year-long war to kick the Mohammedans out. The Mohammedans always wanted to take the Vatican. They were always attacking Italy. I mean, it was just never-ending war with these people. No one in Christendom, as it was known, would ever have fathomed the idea that we ought to invite them in and try to get along with them. Well, The UK, where you are currently at, has what? Immigrated what? 2 million? I forget what the count is. 2 million, and every indication is that I read London papers every day because I like reading London papers. They're good papers. Some of them. Every indication is that these people, these Mohammedans, these Muslims, have basically cloistered themselves into factions, have no intention of assimilating and becoming part of British culture or part of the culture of the United Kingdom. So for Raj is more correct with that poster than Christiane Amanpour ever could be, don't you think?
Well, I think that, you know, again, the real problem here is not that there necessarily has to be a warlike conflict between the British and the people of the Middle East. The problem is we're rendering their homeland uninhabitable.
Right, right.
Okay, so they have to go somewhere. Well, they come over here. They can't reach the United States, which is where, you know, if there were, I suppose, a form of retributive justice, they should actually go to the United States because most of the bombs are coming from the United States.
That's right.
So we render their homeland uninhabitable, and they say, look, we're trying to escape the bombs. We need shelter. And they move to the closest place that's safe, and that's Europe. And so, I think we have to look at the root of the refugee crisis, not pretend that these refugees just somehow emerge spontaneously out of nowhere. We're actually causing this exodus. And so if we want to solve that problem, we have to stop destroying, wrecking their countries. I mean, when we invaded Iraq in 2003, millions of Iraqis left because it was unsafe. The security conditions were so bad that almost all of the middle class and upper middle class Iraqis fled. It was a huge brain drain from the country.
That's right.
The place was just left in shambles. And the same thing is happening now in all these countries that Obama's bombing: Syria, Libya, Yemen, Pakistan. He's bombing something like 7 different countries.
Somalia.
Well, what are you going to do if you see bombs coming down from the sky? You're going to flee. It's a perfectly natural response. So.
Well, Lori Calhoun, the author of We Kill Because We Can, is live. And I didn't get the name of the town. I did, but I've already misplaced it. What's the name? Where are you at?
I'm in Cramlington, which is on the east side of England, in a province known as Northumberland. So it's a little bit north of Newcastle.
Okay. I know where Newcastle is. So Laurie is a U.S.-based writer, but she's traveling abroad this summer and just happens to be visiting the U.K. I'm looking at your post yesterday, and I now see Farage's the poster that you were talking about, the Breaking
That's
Point
it,
poster.
Right.
Now, your headline is, what's conspicuously missing from the big bad Brexit debate drama? And it is, as you just pointed out, it is the fact that we kind of created the refugee crisis and the EU helped create the crisis. So actually, this does address a very existential problem that the United Kingdom and its citizens are going to have to deal with and will be dealing with for decades into the future. So it seems to me that the correct choice was made. But let me say something else to you that you said about, okay, so if you're a member state in the EU, that means you can travel freely in between countries. When I was in Scotland 2 summers ago, about this time, two years ago, when I stayed at a B&B in Edinburgh, all of the domestic help. Now, here in the United States, we have Latinas that perform many, a large share of the domestic services in hotels. You know, they're maids and janitors and what have you here. That's not a knock. That's just a statistic.
Right.
You know who was maintaining the two B&Bs that I stayed at in Edinburgh?
Who?
Polish immigrants.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Polish. I found out, and then I struck a conversation up with her, and she said, oh, there are tens of thousands of us here. They have immigrated. Now, they weren't bombed that I know of, but tens of thousands of Poles that took the opportunity that the EU provided them and relocated to Scotland. Now, when the Scottish vote, this is what I just find irreconcilable, Laurie. When the Scots voted to secede from the EU or to withdraw, One of the reasons they cited was what I just told you, that they were being force-fed immigrants from countries like Poland and Albania that were taking all of the entry-level jobs away from the young people.
And that's right, and also driving the wages down. So
right.
There's so much competition because unskilled workers can travel freely within the entire region of the European Union. What happens to unskilled workers in Britain is that they have to compete with hundreds or thousands of Eastern Europeans or people from other parts of Europe who are also unskilled, and that drives the price, the wages down. So it's really devastating for people in the lower classes, for unskilled British people, because they can't really pick up and move and get a job somewhere else in the way that the Eastern Europeans can come over here, compete for lower wages, and force the native Brits to accept lower wages if they want to work. So it's very bad for the lower classes. The Brits who go abroad tend to be professionals. Right. So
right.
They go to Paris to work, or they go to Germany. They tend to be professionals. They're not unskilled laborers. The unskilled laborers are kind of stuck here competing with this huge influx of Eastern Europeans, who, by the way, are Caucasians.
Right.
So this
right.
isn't really a race question at all. It's a straight immigration question. It has nothing to do intrinsically with questions of race. You may or may not be a racist and be worried about immigration, but you can be worried about immigration without being a racist.
I'd like to play one more clip for you, Laurie, and get your commentary on it before you dash out for your fish and chips.
Okay.
You may have heard this one before. It's quite funny, but there's a question now that must be asked. Let's listen to the clip, and then I'll ask the question.
Okay, Roger, your special subject tonight is the economies of the European Community. Mm. Your time starts now. Best of luck.
Thank you.
How much does Greece owe, Roger?
$367 billion.
Correct. And who do they owe it to?
Mostly to the other European economies.
Correct. How much does Ireland owe?
$865 billion.
Correct. And who do they owe it to?
Other European economies, mostly.
Correct. How much does Spain and Italy owe?
$1 trillion each.
Correct. Who to?
Mainly France, Britain and Germany.
Correct. And how are Germany, France and Britain going, Roger?
Well, they're struggling a bit, aren't they?
Correct. Why?
Because they've lent all these vast amounts of money to other European economies that can't possibly pay them back.
Correct. So what are they going to do?
They're going to have to bail them out.
Correct. Where are they getting the money to do that, Roger?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that one.
How much does Portugal owe?
Hang on a minute. What was the answer to that earlier question?
Just keep answering the questions, Roger. Where is Portugal going to get the money it owes to Germany if Germany can't get back the money that it lent to Italy?
Just a minute. What was the answer to the previous question? The question was, how can broke economies
yes.
lend money to other broke economies
yes.
who haven't got any money because they can't pay back the money the broke economy lent to the other broke economy and shouldn't have lent it to them in the first place because the broke economy can't pay it back.
You're wasting very valuable time, Roger. How much money does Spain owe to Italy?
$41 billion, but where are they going to get it?
Correct. What does Italy owe to Spain?
$27 billion, but they haven't got it. They're broke.
Correct. How can they pay each other if neither of them has any money?
They're going to get a bailout, aren't they?
Correct. And where's the money coming from for the bailout?
That's what I'm asking you.
Correct. Why are people...
Okay.
Okay, it's a mess. No doubt about it. And actually, one of the men I spoke with yesterday said probably the smartest thing I heard out of anyone, which is the simple question, why can't we just be a country?
Yes!
It's brilliant.
It is brilliant. But Mel, now let me ask you, I'm putting you on a spot. I don't know if you've studied the issue or if you've heard anything about it. When the UK leaves, when they officially draft the document and serve Brussels, all right, guys, we're out. Here's our drop-dead date certain. We have no more relations, not taking your refugees. We're not accepting your stupid currency, et cetera, et cetera. The UK was part of that scheme, and I know that Daniel Hannan was one of the MPs that was just excoriated Gordon Brown when all this was happening. When the bailout money was being laundered through Brussels to Greece, and Greece hasn't paid a nickel of it back. So there is a question of debt. I mean, we joke about it here that Angela Merkel is going to go Lincoln and is going to send the Luftwaffe over to the UK and start bombing them, or threatening to bomb them if they actually go through with the leave vote. But it's really not a funny question, because there actually is a question that now has to be resolved. The United Kingdom is part of that lending scheme. They participated in that. I don't know how they're going to deal with this. Is the EU going to vote, hey, you can't leave until you give us £1.2 trillion British pound sterling or whatever? Have you heard anything about that?
Well, no, I think this is what a lot of the quote-unquote experts were warning about, that it would be a huge mess to untangle all of the threads from this scheme. I mean, it's really, really a complex web.
Right, right, right.
And it's going to be very difficult to untangle. And that's, you know, basically everyone's like, just don't leave, because we don't know how to deal with this mess. But I think that, you know, it's a little bit extreme to conclude that somehow Britain can't trade with any of the European nations once it leaves the EU. That's actually not true. I mean, Europe trades with lots of countries.
Well,
European countries trade with lots of countries outside the EU. So now the UK will be one of those countries outside of the EU,
right,
just like the United States is. So there's nothing that precludes their ability to trade with France, Germany, and all of the other countries. What it means is that they're no longer bound by the edicts of the Eurocrats, which is what the British people want. The British people want a say in how their country is run. They want control back, and that's what the vote was all about, far as I can tell.
There's another part of that trading, another one of the conditions that has been placed upon the people of Great Britain by the EU. And I bet a lot of people don't know this. I only know because I traveled to Scotland and I asked the question. I'm like, well, hey, what is this? Oh, well, that's the VAT tax. You know, there's like an 18% VAT tax that's levied by the EU that merchants in Scotland were collecting on every purchase I made. Because I asked the question, I said, and of course I knew what a VAT tax was, but I didn't realize they have to itemize it now. They passed some bill in the Scottish Parliament that said they have to itemize. So every time somebody buys something in Scotland, if you get a receipt like here in the United States, you know, you buy something at the grocery store, and at the bottom of the receipt they'll show you you'll get your subtotal, right? And then you have your sales tax. So they had to on receipts now in Scotland, on your sales receipt, you get the VAT tax, and it's substantial. We're not going to have to collect,
because someone has to pay for all of those bureaucrats working in Brussels.
That's right.
I mean, there are thousands and thousands of them. I mean, endless numbers of them, and they all have to be paid. They're this extra government. There's this shadow government, you know, beyond government. So you think, you know, big government is bad? The EU is a meta-government. It's a government of governments. And it's just layer and layer after layer after layer of bureaucracy. And, I mean, one of the points that I found really remarkable by David Cameron in the BBC Q&A last week, which I watched with great interest, was that he made this point that, you know, we have such great trade relationships with the other European Union countries. We trade more with Luxembourg than we do with India. And my response to that was, well, isn't that a problem? I mean, shouldn't you have a better trading relationship with India than you have with Luxembourg? I mean, and it looks like the EU is preventing that from happening. So maybe the UK will actually flourish after going through, you know, some of the hiccups that it's bound to go through after such a monumental change. I don't know. It's phenomenal, really.
Well, and now one way to look at this, and Laurie Calhoun is on the Skype Maker Hotline with us. She's the author of We Kill Because We Can. One of the upshots of this is basically then the people of the United Kingdom just got a huge, massive tax cut. Because when that VAT tax goes away, they don't have to pay it anymore. I'm telling you, it's substantial. I know because I paid it. And then finally here, just on the subject of trade, this is why I think this vote, a listener phoned the Mark Breslin show here on the Crusade Channel, which comes on before me every morning, and told him, Mark, this is really now the shot heard around the world. And, of course, the shot at Lexington and Concord was supposedly the shot heard around the world, but this one is really the shot heard around the world. And I'm going to tell you why, because the people of Great Britain now are afforded the opportunity to ask the political questions, Lori, that say if Texas wanted to do Texit, right? The people of the UK now are going to have to do, they're going to have to actually work out the politics, the political, the government parts of the separation, with the world watching and hopefully paying attention and learning. That, to me, is what is most exciting about this. Because, you know, this didn't happen when the former Soviet Republic seceded in 1991, when the 14 of them broke away. We didn't get any coverage because they didn't have any media there. Well, we got buku media in the United Kingdom. So you're going to see every little wart, every little scar, every little skirmish, and every little scrape that goes into actually changing your form of government, Lori Calhoun, right in front of our eyes and divorcing. It's going to be a public divorce of a separation of one entity separating from another entity that it was in union in. There is no difference about what GB is about to do, Great Britain or UK, whatever you wish to call it, what they are about to do, than what if your home state of New Jersey decided that they wanted to leave the American Union. There's no difference now. So now we get to see, because the threats have not only been made against people of Great Britain. If you leave the Union, you're going to go broke. You're going to start wars. You're going to starve. The sky's going to fall, et cetera, et cetera. Any state in the United States or any part of a state, like Vermont, for example, that the Free State Project that is threatened, well, we want to leave the Union. We want to govern ourselves. They're all extorted, Lori, the exact same extortion campaign. We'll now actually get to see that. I don't know about you, but I'm excited about that.
It's very exciting. It's also exciting for people like Canadians in Quebec who have been wanting to secede for a very long time.
Right.
It's really exciting. Somewhat ironically, I saw on Twitter that there are people calling for London to secede from the UK because London was so pro-Remain on this vote.
Right.
And they feel alienated now by the rest of the British. So it's kind of ironic. So I tweeted back that maybe they could become like Malta. You know, London could just be like in the middle of the United Kingdom and be part of the EU if they want to, but they would have to secede first. But you're right, it's wonderful. I think this is a great triumph for democracy. It's bringing to bear what we know that states were supposed to be in the beginning, but how they've transmogrified into these supra entities,
right,
that are inaccessible and that take control, much more control. And the more power they have, the more power they take. And they don't want to cede power. So that's why you saw a lot of this hysteria about this vote. But I think it's wonderful. I think it's a great day for democracy. And I think the world will be watching.
Yeah, for sure. Where are you headed to next?
Well, I'm going to be here for a couple of weeks, and then I'll be off to another village. So, but for now, I'm in Cramlington and really enjoying it. So, very happy to be here. I was delighted with the result, absolutely delighted. Well, especially when I saw the tactics of the Remain campaign. I think they really backfired. I actually disagree with the speaker you had a recording of earlier, who said that without the fear tactics, the Leave victory would have been even bigger. I actually think that those tactics, the fear mongering, the threats, and especially the insults,
right,
and the denigration of people who dared, to express a desire to leave. I feel like that complex of tactics really backfired on the Remain campaign. I feel like if the Remain campaigners had actually appealed to the better sides of the Leave campaigners, to the people disposed to vote Leave. They might have won some of them over, but instead they attacked them. They acted like, oh, you're little people, you don't know what you're doing, you're stupid, how can you ignore the experts? How can the Britons make such a colossal mistake? You know, you saw this all over Twitter.
Right, right.
And these people were like, you know what? I have a vote, and I'm going to make my decision based on my assessment of the facts, and I'm going to vote, and we'll see what happens. And they won. So I think it was wonderful.
And we will get to see what happens. All right, Laurie, keep us posted, and I will continue to read your blog. And Laurie and I have struck up a pen pal ship, if you will. I'm just glad that the letters don't take 2 weeks to get across via ocean liner. So
yeah, that's right. Thank goodness for the internet. That's the one contribution of the military industrial complex to the quality of our lives.
There you go. All right, Laurie, be safe, my friend. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Mike. Great talking to you.
Yeah, my pleasure.